Welcome into the show, Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. Vanderbilt leading Mississippi State 1-0 in the third inning in Omaha. Big game in the College World Series. We will keep you posted all afternoon long. Floyd, last segment we talked with Chris Sanders, and you brought up the question of Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And there's, I guess, a little bit of difference between Matt LaFleur's system and what Aaron Rodgers is used to. And it all came out in an NFL.com story by Michael Silver here recently. And I think a lot of media might be blowing this into a bigger story than it actually is. But it is a story worth watching. And here was Michael Silver commenting on the issue between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur.
First of all, realize that this offense is designed to make Aaron Rodgers' life much easier than it has been in recent years. They foresee a balance with the run game and the pass game, play action, getting rid of the ball more quickly. It's also an offense, and this is really the Kyle Shanahan offense that Matt LaFleur goes back to from his days at Houston. They pride themselves on having answers for the quarterback. And when they feel like, oh, maybe there won't be an answer on this play, we're going to give the quarterback two choices based on what he sees. Pick one of those things. Well, Aaron Rodgers...
He wants the full suite of plays at his disposal.
And he's very, very good at it, to be fair. So this is one of the issues that they have to work through.
That was Michael Silver on the early, I guess, honeymoon phase relationship, if you want to call it that, between Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, where Matt LaFleur's system, which was with Kyle Shanahan, doesn't really lend itself to a lot of audibles at the line of scrimmage. And Aaron Rodgers, as you know, if you watch any games with Aaron Rodgers, he loves to audible at the line after seeing what the defense presents him. So, Floyd, is this an issue or not an issue right now?
Well, I mean, I think right now they're working their way through it, but it could end up being an issue simply because I think Aaron has had the opportunity to change plays almost at his will, you know, during games all the way through. And to be honest with you, I've never been one with young quarterbacks. I've never really liked a great deal of this. If you call, and here's the problem you run into, in my opinion, if you call a running play, and you go up the line of scrimmage, there's eight or nine guys in the box. I mean, it's generally speaking a futile effort. It's a wasted play. So why would you run that play? You know, you would love to have a quarterback that had the ability to come out and say, we're gonna throw a slant, we're going to throw a swing, we're going to throw a something and just see. And I think that's the kind of thing that a guy, especially a guy like Aaron, can get you out of. Mm-hmm. But I think the way they do it is what they'll do is they'll say, check with me. And they'll call a running play. And they get up to the line of scrimmage, and it's a running play that's either going to go to the right or the left, or strong or weak, or behind one guy or behind the other guy, or, you know, however you're determining it. So they say, check with me. Well, he gets up the line of scrimmage and looks it over, and it's overloaded to the left. Well, we're running to the right. So then he calls that play, and they're off and running. The question is, you call that running play again, and they've got nine guys in the box. Doesn't matter which way you're running it. You know, they've got people that are free all over the place. So you can't block all those guys. And I think those are the kind of plays you would love to have your quarterback get you out of. Because the bottom line anymore, these great offenses that we see, like Tom Brady, you know, we'll go back to Tom simply because they're always, you know, he's always got new players. He's always got somebody that's different. They never, in theory, never have a bad play because Tom gets them in the right play. Tom changes. He can do virtually whatever he wants to do. But Tom is smart enough and good enough. He can get up there. He can look at the defense, say, okay, they're, you know, overlaid it to the right. We're running to the left. Or they've got so many in the box. No, I'm throwing the ball. Or it's a three-man rush. here we go. I'm going to turn around and hand it to you, running back, and you gash him. Mm-hmm. So it's all of those kinds of things. And if you have a quarterback that is a veteran guy that is smart, I mean, I think that is really – you're not using your weapons fully if you don't allow that guy to manipulate the offense.
So here's the exact quote from Matt LaFleur to NFL.com with Michael Silver. Matt LaFleur said, quote, "We're running a system I first picked up while working with Kyle Shanahan in Houston a decade ago, and we've never really had a quarterback who's had complete freedom to change plays at the line because that's not really the way the offense is set up. But, I mean, this is Aaron Rodgers. He's had a lot of freedom to make those calls, and deservedly so. Now, how do we reconcile that and get to a place where we put him in the best position to succeed?" That was Matt LaFleur to NFL.com. Aaron Rodgers said, quote, "It's a conversation in progress. I don't think you want to ask me to turn off 11 years of recognizing defenses. We have a number of check with me's and line of scrimmage stuff. It's just the other stuff that really not many people in this league can do. That's not like a humble brag or anything. That's just a fact. There aren't many people that can do at the line of scrimmage what I've done over the years." Aaron Rodgers.
And I think that's right. And that's what you don't want to take away. Because the truth is, you spend your entire career getting a guy to the point he can do those things. Because he's exactly right. Not everybody can do that. In fact, very few can do it. And if you get to that point as a signal caller, I mean, you're a genius. I mean, you never call a bad play.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know, I mean, what percentage of the plays that you call do you actually run? You know, you may call, every snap of every game, but when it's all said and done, maybe the offense only runs 20% of what you called. Because the quarterback changes the rest of it.
Now, I do think there is a part of this that is being overblown by the media across the nation, probably because there's not a whole lot to talk about right now. Now that the NBA Finals are done and the Stanley Cup Final is done and we're in the NFL offseason. Because LaFleur's quote opens the door for there to be some freedom. Like, it's not like he's saying this offense does not allow for audibles, and Aaron Rodgers is going to have to do it my way or the highway. Like, that's not what I got out of Matt LaFleur's quote
right.
about the whole audible thing.
Right.
Now, where I do think where it would be a problem is, let's say, the Packers go up to the line of scrimmage, and the Packers want to run a wide receiver screen, and the corners are playing press coverage. Well, you don't want to throw a screen to the wide receiver when the corner is playing press, right?
Right.
Like, you are lining yourself up to get picked off at that point. And Aaron Rodgers switches it and says, all right, Devontae Adams, I'm not going to throw you a screen. You're going to go a slant or a go or whatever their verbiage is. And it works, but then Matt LaFleur looks at Aaron Rodgers saying, what are you doing? I called a screen. And Aaron Rodgers is like, I just got you 20, 30 yards.
Yeah, I got
on a
you
scoring
out of a
drive.
Bad play.
Like, why are you complaining about this?
Yeah.
Or, I think that's where it becomes a true issue.
Well,
if it's happening in a regular season game where Matt LaFleur is going to Aaron Rodgers and it is something brewing on the sideline between those two.
And the truth is, there are a lot of coaches now. I don't know LaFleur, but there are a lot of coaches that want, they love that power of, hey, I'm in complete control here and I'm not letting anybody change anything. This is the way we're going to do it, by God, and I'm going to live or die with it. You know, the problem is, anymore in the game, the way the game is played, that's not a very smart way to do it.
I mean, if Bill Belichick is telling me, don't audible, go with my play, I think I'm going to go with Bill Belichick.
Yeah, sure.
If Matt LaFleur, a rookie head coach, is telling me that, and I'm Aaron Rodgers, and I've been a very successful NFL quarterback, I'm a future Hall of Famer, I'm looking at him like, come on now.
Yeah. Aaron has called a lot more plays than LaFleur ever has.
he absolutely has.
During the game, when it was important.
Let's get to Corey. He wants to weigh in on Aaron Rodgers. Corey, welcome into Jared and the GM.
Hey, guys. Just an observation and then a question, and you kind of touched on it. I feel like this is kind of what LaFleur did in Tennessee to a certain extent. Is he kind of didn't necessarily utilize what the players that they had were good at. It was kind of like people had to conform to his system to a certain extent. And I don't think that's just him. I think, like you were talking about, some coaches just like having that authoritative type of situation. And I don't know if that's ego or if that's just their butts the one on the line. So if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down on my calls. Or I'm just kind of curious on your guys' take on that kind of mentality.
Thanks, Corey, for the call. Floyd?
Yeah, Corey. I mean, I would agree with you. And I think it's all the above. I think it's ego, which plays a large part of it, especially, and I don't want this to sound ugly towards LaFleur because I'm certainly not doing that, but younger coaches, you know, they just aren't as stable, just aren't as secure, and they don't want, for example, for a young coach to be coaching Tom Brady and have, you know, a player come out and say, well, Brady audible to the perfect play for, that might tick a young coach off. You know, wait a minute, he changed the play that I sent in, kind of a thing. A veteran guy is going, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great audible. Way to go, man. I'm glad you did it. You know, so I think it depends on who you're talking about, too.
I would be curious to know how much freedom Marcus Mariota had at the line of scrimmage.
I'm going
to
guess very little. I'm just guessing.
Especially with this quote from Matt LaFleur, it sounds like he will make exceptions to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
But
not liking it.
How many exceptions?
Yeah, he's not liking it.
We'll continue this conversation on the other side. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Jared and GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. Jared and the GM, Ryan Porth, in for Jared Stillman this afternoon alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. Floyd, last segment we were talking about Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, and how there's a little bit of a getting to know you process, I guess,
yes,
you want to say right now, between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. They're not exactly on the same page in terms of what they've done before this upcoming season with audibles at the line of scrimmage, where Matt LaFleur's system doesn't cater to a lot of audibles. And Aaron Rodgers is probably the king of audibling in the National Football League, if Tom Brady isn't. I mean, Brady and Rodgers, just off memory, audible as much as any other quarterbacks because they're basically a coach at the line.
Oh, yeah. All the old guys. I mean, I would assume Breeze has the freedom to do pretty much what he wants. I mean, I think all the guys, and it's not one of those, I'm not sure these systems necessarily started that way, but as the quarterback evolves and the quarterback gets better and the quarterback gets smarter and, you know, the offensive people and head coach realize that, hey, you know, we're having a lot fewer bad plays. Imagine, for example, against San Diego last year, if Marcus had the ability to line up and look at the defense and realize he's going to turn around and hand the ball to a tight end and he's going to have to find his way. And he just audibled out of it to something else, threw the ball or ran the ball or ran an option or anything, you know. I think that's where it really, really helps you when you have guys, you know, especially quarterbacks of that caliber.
Now, this whole deal came up because of the NFL.com story from Michael Silver. And Michael Silver in the story says, quote, "To make it work, both men have to be adaptable, for there are some built-in challenges that won't be easily navigated." Now, how much is LaFleur really going to ask Aaron Flippin' Rodgers, to adapt to his system? I mean, doesn't there have to be a certain point where LaFleur goes to Rodgers and says, all right, what plays worked for you specifically with a guy like Davante Adams or an Aaron Jones so that we don't remove those from the system and we can kind of incorporate those into my system?
I've seen it done two or three different ways, but I think the way you do that is you say, okay, now there are certain, and what a coach like LaFleur is afraid of is it's first and 10 and I want to run the ball for whatever reason. And, you know, maybe it's the end of the game and we're ahead and he doesn't want a quarterback. I mean, he's going to face a 9-man front. Well, he doesn't want a quarterback saying, ah, there's a 9-man front again. I'm going to pick it up and throw it. Clock stops, you know, it ends up, you end up losing a game. And if you have a young, inexperienced quarterback, that is an issue. But with an Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or guys like that, I mean, they're smarter than half the coaches on your staff. So they know what's going on. But with younger coach, with younger players, what coaches will do is they will have things like they will make a call, stick with me, you know, say, okay, we're going to call a run. It's going to go to the left or to the right, and there is no audibling out of this. You know, whatever term you use. And he knows that, okay, even though if there's a 9 or 10 or 11 man front, I'm going to pick the best way to go and go with it.
Now, I haven't gone back and looked at the play itself. The play in London, the 2-point conversion where Marcus Mariota throws to Taywan Taylor in the back of the end zone. On the 2-point conversion, they end up losing the game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Let's say I have no idea if Marcus Mariota audible to that or if he just went with the play call and he thought Taywan Taylor would be there. He wasn't open and they ended up losing the game. But let's take that as a for instance. Aaron Rodgers, either a 2-point conversion or it's third and goal, you're down by 4 in the fourth quarter and you're trying to win the game on this play. Do you really think Aaron Rodgers is going to go with the play that was called? Or is he going to go up there to the line of scrimmage, see the defense, and see there's a – if I audible to a slant to Davante Adams, this is a gimme touchdown. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to what he feels is best. Like, that's kind of the person Aaron Rodgers is, that if that play is there, I'm going to audible no matter what my coach thinks.
And I, you know, as a coach, if you're a smart coach, you'd be okay with that. The part that kills you, and I had forgotten about the throw to Taylor, was remember that play was supposed to go to Davis first. Well, Davis had a guy up on his face, bump and run, and he didn't get a clean release. So now Marcus has to go to his second or his third read. Well, down there on the 1 yard line, you don't want to have to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have enough time to do all that. I mean, they're not going to just stand back there and let you, you know, hold the ball for 3 or 4 seconds. It's going to be something that's instant. And I think what Marcus or what somebody would want to have the option to do is if they get up there and they look out there and you've got a second-year receiver that played half the year before who's lined up across from an all-pro corner who's up in bump-and-run position and is going to jam the heck out of this guy, you can look over at that and go, okay, well, let's go back over here to the other side and find a matchup that you like is better. And instead of having to go through the progression, the read, you just change sides or you change plays or you change whatever it may be to give yourself a better chance to win. And that's where being able to get out of plays is so important and so great for the team if they can do that. You know, quarterback gets up there and they look around, or you call a play, and we talked about some of the great matchups we're going to have this year with these guys. I mean, you line up, Marcus gets up the line of scrimmage and he looks out and he sees, okay, all-pro corner over there, all-pro corner over there. I've got a box safety lined up over one of the slots, whoever is playing slot. Guess where I'm going with the ball? You know? Corner, slot, wake up, here it comes. And that gives you a chance to be successful. You know, you don't have a failed play.
615-737-1025 if you want to jump in and weigh in. John would like to talk about Marcus Mariota. John, welcome into Jared of the GM.
Hey guys. Great show always. Okay, Floyd, this is for you, and I guess maybe we could even apply it to Rodgers and LaFleur in a different way, but as a GM, it sounds philosophical, but as a GM, when does perception turn into reality? And how I equate this to Marcus. If Marcus gets hurt again this year, is the perception of injury prone gone, or is it a reality that he's injury prone? And I am guessing the trigger would be different for different positions, but to me, we're kind of at that point. If this happens again, is this reality rather than a thinking that, that Marcus gets hurt, does that become our reality? So I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Thanks, John. I mean, the truth is there are people in the league that just can't stay healthy. And at certain positions, you can maybe put up with a little bit of it. Other positions, and you may be able to protect yourself with it. The quarterback is really not one of those positions. Mm-hmm. And so it's, and you know, it's important for him to if we're not going to be able to play with some of these injuries for whatever reason, then the bottom line is we've got to stay healthy or, you know, you're not going to be able to rely on the guy. I mean, it's just that simple. And we're getting to a point in the development that, of this franchise that missing a game or two and you not being able to win that game or two is going to be enough to keep you out of the playoffs, you know, the next couple of years. So if the difference between, you know, him being healthy and not being healthy is the difference between winning 9 games, not making the playoffs, or winning 11 games and having home field advantage, well, that's a pretty big step. That's where it gets tough.
I mean, I would say this year, if not the next 2 years, we're going to know a lot more about Marcus Mariota in terms of whether he's Sam Bradford or Steve McNair.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of pulling two examples out of the top of my head, but Sam Bradford was a top choice that could never stay healthy as a starting quarterback and had his moments but also had some inconsistencies and some health issues. But Steve McNair was someone who took that next step, as you well know.
And Sam Bradford was one of those guys that everybody always said, man, oh, man, this guy can throw the ball. Man, oh, man, this guy's smart. Man, oh, but he can't stay. You know, he can't. And sure enough, people would bring him in. I mean, 2-3 teams, bring him in. Mm-hmm. He starts off like a house fire. Game 6, up, he's down.
Yeah.
And now he's out for 3 games. And instead of you being in the middle of the playoff, in a playoff run, you know, you are now 3 games behind everybody else. So bad. But Bradford's probably a pretty good example of somebody that did just that, could not stay healthy, and was a talented guy, but just couldn't stay on the field.
Coming up next, Marcus Mariota is not the only contract year Tennessee Titan that has a big year ahead of them. Kevin Byard is one. When should the Titans sign Kevin Byard to an extension? That's all coming up next. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Jared and GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Live from the Wholesale Inc. Matt Juliet Game Studios, it is Jared and GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. Floyd,
sir.
Big decisions later this year and early next calendar year for GM John Robinson.
Ooh,
for the
yes.
Tennessee Titans. Not yes. only with Marcus Mariota, but numerous key players.
Yeah.
When we're talking Derrick Henry, we're talking Jack Conklin, we're talking some veteran defensive players like Wesley Woodyard and Logan Ryan, and a young, really good player in Kevin Byard.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Byard going into his fourth season as a safety out of MTSU, local kid. And 2 years ago, his, if you want to call it his sophomore year in the NFL, led the league in interceptions with 8. And then last year he had 4 interceptions, and there's some talk over what kind of contract is Kevin Byard A, worth, or B, going to get mm-hmm. from the Tennessee Titans. But I think the bigger question is when do you sign Kevin Byard to that extension? Because when you sign him to that extension might factor into how much money you have to pay him.
Well, I think this. I mean, I'm just guessing now. If it was me, I know I would have tried to have gone through at least a round of discussions so that you have some kind of a feel, because all the guys that we're talking about are guys that, you know, you would love to have back. You know, you would love to have Conklin back. You'd love to have Derrick Henry back. You'd love to have Byard back. You'd love to have all of those guys. Well, the bottom line is you're probably not going to be able to have them all.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to try to get a feel for the things that you're going to be able to do and do those. So if you call Byard's guy and you're thinking to yourself, okay, Byard is going to cost me, I'm just going to throw a number, you know, $13 million a year. I don't know what the number is. Byard's going to cost me $13 million a year. Well, you talk to him and the discussion goes from 13 to 18. You know, now you're going, this one's going to be a little bit hard. Well, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to do this one. And then you go to Conklin and you say, okay, Conklin is, you know, going to cost me, I don't even know, what was Lawan's? Wasn't his like 17 a year or something?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so Conklin, you're 16, 15 a year. And you talk to his people and you say, okay, you know, what is this going to look like? And they say, well, we think, you know, he's not going to be the highest paid tackle, but he should get, well, then you start thinking, okay, maybe I got a chance. And so you start digging and you'll have a shot. So that when it gets down to the lick log and it's time to start doing things, you say, okay, I feel good about signing these three guys. Let's get that done. Okay. You know, go ahead and pull the trigger on those guys, get it negotiated, get it done. And then you wait and see on the rest of them.
Luan was $16
million. Okay.
And the highest paid safety is Landon Collins at 14 and Tyrann Mathieu at 14. So if you're John Robinson, do you take the approach and try to get Kevin Byard signed now? The fact that he's coming off a season which wasn't as productive stats-wise as it was 2 years ago when he was an all-pro, do you try to get it done now and sign him to a contract? Maybe you come close to the $14 million. Maybe you give Kevin Byard 12.5, 13, 13.5, somewhere in there. Get him locked up now before he might go out and have another big year and, you know, have 7 or 8 interceptions, a lot of them more impactful in a game than some of them have been in recent years, and he returns a couple for a touchdown. All of a sudden, Kevin Byard's profile and his stock is going through the roof, and then in January or in February when you're trying to lock him up, it's going to cost you $15 million. So do you try to get him locked up now if you're John Robinson?
Well, again, if you can talk to him about 12 and a half, yeah, you probably do. And they're listening and they're willing. Or you can structure it some way, somehow, so you can get past it. Yeah. But the part that's scary is you're going to, you know, if you're talking to them and they're saying, hey, Collins got, you know, 14 and we're a lot better than Collins. So, you know, we're talking 15 and a half. Well, now you're kind of taken aback a little bit. You go, uh-oh, you know, let's see what this is. This is going to be really, really expensive. And then maybe it's not quite as tantalizing. So I don't know where they are, what they've done, but I think that's a process you go through and you kind of get a feel for these guys. And if you're Byard, I mean, let's face it, if you're Kevin Byard's agent right now, is there anybody statistically that you're going to take a backseat to? You know, there probably isn't. You're saying, wait a minute. Now, we've had, 12 interceptions in the last 2 years?
Yep.
You know, we've led the league in interceptions in the last 2 years. And so, you know, we need to be paid accordingly. And you'll talk to agents like this. I have no idea who Kevin's agents are, and I have no idea what they're talking about. But you'll talk to agents that will say, hey, we're the number one interceptor in the league the last 2 years. Better than corners, better than safeties. We need to be paid corner money. And you start talking corner money with a safety now, you're in a whole different ball field.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of agents, former NFL agent Joel Corey was on with Morning Drive recently, and Joel Corey gave his take on Kevin Byard.
Well, I think any deal where you sign Kevin Byard, you're going to have to make him the highest paid safety. Last year you made Taylor Lewan the highest paid offensive guard. You saw what happened this year in the open market. Tyrann Mathieu didn't have the best year in the world. Didn't play. I thought he played better in Arizona than he did last year. Highest paid safety, on average, $14 million per year, 3-year deal. Landon Collins, best year was 2 years ago, ended up hurt and had surgery this year. signs the richest safety deal out there, $84 million, 6 years, $14 million per year. I would rather have gone shorter, because the more bite of the apples you get as a good player, the better off you're going to be. You saw an older safety, Earl Thomas, almost get $14 million a year, and he's had two broken legs in 3 years. So Byard is better off doing a three-year extension and being able to come up again when he's in his late 20s, or either getting extended in his late 20s, because then who knows where the safety market will be, and he can reap the benefit of any changing market conditions, as opposed to doing the six-year extension or six-year contract like a Landon Collins.
That was former NFL agent Joel Corey recently with Morning Drive giving his take on Kevin Byard, basically saying any deal for Kevin Byard that the Titans are going to sign, whether it's now or later, is going to be the highest paid safety in the league. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I'm sure the agents will be arguing that. Yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. And he hit it right on the head. I mean, you know, both of those contracts are at 14. And like I said, they're going to be arguing that Kevin is the number one interceptor in the league last year, on and on and on. And there's not a lot, you know. You look at the numbers, that's right. Mm-hmm. So then they're going to, you know, like I said, I just hope they don't go to, well, you know, we need to start talking corner money here, because that's what he's playing like right now.
Whether he gets it or not, is Kevin Byard worth being the highest paid safety in the National Football League? We will discuss that question coming up next. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in. Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth in for Jared Stillman this afternoon alongside the GM, Floyd Reese. Currently in Omaha, one of the ball boys is picking up a beach ball in the outfield, as Vanderbilt holds a 2-0 lead over Mississippi State in the top of the fifth inning. J.J. Blade with an RBI double to right center. So
he's killing the ball, isn't he?
I mean, between Austin Martin and J.J. Blade.
Oh, jeez.
And then Steven Scott was the one hitting the home run earlier today. I mean, that team is absolutely loaded. Another hit, so Vandy has runners on the corners with one out in the top of the fifth. Kumar Rocker pitching another whale of a game so far through four innings. So Vandy looking good right now. We will keep you posted throughout the day. But ask the question before the break of, is Kevin Byard worth making the highest paid safety in the league? Is it worth it? Whether it happens or not, which it sounds like it will happen, whether it's, you know, 14 matching Landon Collins and Tyrann Mathieu, or just a smidge above that, whether it's 14.25, 14.5, whatever, it does sound like Kevin Byard, whenever he gets his new contract, is going to be in the ballpark of being the highest paid safety in the NFL. But Floyd, do you feel like he is worth it?
Well, I think I agree with you. I mean, it's the nature of free agency that the next guy in line, if he qualifies, is going to be the highest paid guy. And this got all thrown out of whack when Washington signed Collins and gave him all that money. I mean, he did not deserve that much money, but he got it. And Mathieu, how does he say his name?
Mathieu.
Mathieu?
Yeah.
Okay, Mathieu.
This isn't Walter Matthau, the former actor in Bad News Bears and Grumpy Old Men. By the way, Walter Matthau, an all-time underrated actor in movies, but that's neither here nor there.
he didn't deserve it either, but he got it, you know. And so here's a guy that of those three certainly deserves it, and he's going to be the highest paid safety, you know, in the league. And the question is where, you know, is it going to be here or be somebody else, someplace else? But I don't think there's any doubt but that he'll be, when it's all said and done, the highest paid guy. Now, you know, the thing that you try to do if you're doing a deal like this is maybe you can get the average up so that it looks like he's the highest paid guy. But, you know, you guarantee more than the rest of them, but sooner or like people have suggested, a shorter contract. And he may be up for a shorter contract too. You don't know that. I always thought, you know, the contract, the length of the contract to me is the sole determining factor for the signing bonus. So if you're his agent, he'd come in and say, okay, you want signing bonus or you want guaranteed money? Which is it going to be? Because, you know, you're not going to get them both. And I let them, I would let them choose. And so you would go about it that way. So if he wants a shorter contract, I think that's fine. But you're not going to get the signing bonus you would get with a 5 or a 6 year deal. Now, we may be able to do it with guarantees and guarantees on the money so that you end up getting it that way. And if that makes you happy, we can work that out.
Let me ask it to you this way. Do you feel like it's worth paying $14 to $15 million for a safety, taking Kevin Byard's name out of it, because Kevin Byard we both think is a fantastic player in the Titans secondary. But, Floyd, do you feel like $14 to $15 million just for a safety alone is too much?
Yeah, that's I think for me probably that's too much. I mean, I don't, and not taking anything away from the safety, but you know, if I have a choice between giving it to a safety and giving it to a tackle, I'm going to give it to the tackle, simply because, you know, tackles are harder to come by. If you decide you're going to keep Byard, I mean, that's what it's going to cost you. And not taking anything away from him, because he has played great for the Titans. And they have to love him. I don't know a great deal about it, but just watching him play and listening to him talk and all the stuff about him, I mean, you have to love him.
I wonder if part of the reason why John Robinson drafted Amani Hooker where he did in this past draft in April was as insurance in case Kevin Byard is asking for the moon and John Robinson won't give it to him.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be. I mean, how much did we pay? Do you remember what we paid the other safety? I don't. It's no big deal, I guess.
Vaccaro?
Yeah. I don't know what that was, but, you know.
Six.
$6 million a year?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's is Byard, you know, $10 million
better than Vaccaro?
Better than Vaccaro?
It's a fair question.
So, I think that's what you run into, and that's tough. And the Titans are going to have to. I'm just glad I don't have to make those decisions anymore.
If I'm GM John Robinson, and I know that I want to sign Kevin Byard, and I know at some point he will be the highest paid safety in the league, and that's what's going to take. Well, if I'm John Robinson, I'm just getting it out of the way before the season starts, so that's not looming throughout the whole season. And if something breaks down in terms of a contract talk in January, then you risk losing Kevin Byard, where if you just make him the highest paid safety now and you're okay with that, do that now, because if you wait even 5-6 months, that number's just going to go up.
Oh, it's not going back down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and the threshold's set for you. And even though 14 is more than you want to pay, it's still set. Because, and I don't know who's out there in unrestricted free agency, but, you know, there are some solid young safeties out there that if they get to on the market, that number's only going to skyrocket.
Vanderbilt now leads Mississippi State 3-0 in the top of the fifth, and I don't think Vandy is done hitting the ball around the field.
Still got guys on the corner, two outs.
So Vanderbilt leading 3-0 over Mississippi State. Again, we will keep you posted on that. Speaking of highest paid players at their position, Michael Thomas apparently is about to become the highest paid wide receiver for the New Orleans Saints.
His turn.
Any surprise there for you?
Home run. Two on.
Is it also a home run for? No,
yes, so, it so is six, a home run six, for Michael nothing, Thomas.
6-0 Vanderbilt.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
After
yeah.
a home run. In the top of the fifth, so 6-0 Vanderbilt. But is it also a home run for the Saints to get Michael Thomas locked up to that kind of deal?
Well, I think this is just what we're talking about. It's Michael Thomas's turn, and he's going to be the highest paid receiver in the league. And there'll be the argument, well, would he be that kind of receiver if he played in Atlanta? Well, guess what? It doesn't matter. You know, he's right now playing in New Orleans, and he's just, you know, setting the league on fire. And fits that system and fits that quarterback and fits that. And if you want to keep those kind of guys, he's going to be the highest paid receiver in the league.
Does Michael Thomas strike you as somebody who's a product of Drew Brees and the offensive system there, or someone who would excel with any quarterback?
No, well, I don't know that he would excel the way he's excelling now. I mean, he's in a great system for him. I think Drew Brees knows exactly how to use the guy. I think he's got some real talents, but he's not necessarily your prototypical highest paid receiver in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, he's not the guy that's the fastest or, you know, has done. But when it comes to catching footballs and getting first downs and scoring touchdowns, I mean, he's been outstanding. Yeah, he's been really, really good.
So a lot of people are now debating who's going to be next, because Michael Thomas will be the next one. Who's next after Michael Thomas? And two names that have been brought up are Julio Jones in Atlanta, who I believe has 2 years left on his deal, or Amari Cooper in Dallas. Amari Cooper in Dallas is an interesting one because he was very shaky in Oakland, dealt with some injuries, dealt with a lot of inconsistency, goes to Dallas and looked like the true number one wide receiver that we all thought he was when he was initially drafted by the Raiders.
Right, right. He played more like the guy that played that first year or two, you know, where he really looked like the real deal.
And tore it up at Alabama.
Yeah, oh, killed it at Alabama. And then kind of disappeared. You know, just didn't have a couple good years for whatever reason. They made the trade, and now he's, you know, looks like the real deal again. So it's going to cost.
ESPN 94.9 Game 2 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Saturday as Nashville SC takes on the Ottawa Fury in First Tennessee Park. I believe that's at home. First Tennessee Park for Nashville SC versus Ottawa. Wes Bowling and Braden Gall will be on the call. Pregame at 6:45, kickoff at 7, only on ESPN 94.9 Game 2. It's all powered by your Middle Tennessee Toyota dealers. Coming up next, we shift gears to the NHL offseason and everything swirling in that neck of the woods. Kevin Allen of USA Today will join us to give us his perspective on Matt Duchene and the Nashville Predators and everything in between. That's coming up next. I'm Ryan Porthen for Jared Stillman this afternoon alongside the GM Floyd Reese on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app.